Blue Wire.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to That's What Bea Said. I'm Brittany Mollis at Bird's Eye View, and I'm joined tonight by my fabulous fill-in host, Meredith Kane, at MK On Sports. How you doing, Meredith?
Doing well, Miss B. How are you doing?
You know what? I'm pretty sad tonight. It's my last night. It's my last night in Florida. I'm burnt. I'm emotional.
And we've been trying really hard to lure you back to Ohio. Like, I know me and one of our other friends were just constantly trying to bribe you to come back to the Great White North up here.
Yeah, we had to send in reinforcements. My dad came down to rescue me from Florida this week.
Yeah, I think Bree actually sent Jerry on a rescue mission. But based on the pictures you're posting, I don't know if he's going to come back at this point either.
I'm saying, he hasn't been in this good of a mood in like my whole life. Like, did you see that picture of him holding up the rainbow today?
Yes. My goodness.
Jerry is living his best life down here. We might just not come back at all. I don't know.
Please come back. Ohio misses you. I miss you a lot.
I miss you too.
I know Bree misses you.
Bree. So speaking of Bree, guys, unfortunately, she's out of town this week. So I'm sure this episode is about to go off the rails. Because yeah, she's like our point guard. I'm more of like a shooting guard where I just come in and shoot terribly. But, you know, I try my best.
What would I be? I'm like really bad at the basketball analogies, but I don't know like what position I would play. I think it would be, I don't know. Maybe I'm like the Tristan Thompson where I should be better than I am. No. And then every once in a while, I just play so well.
You get those boards. You could be the Tristan. So, yeah. We're missing our point guard tonight. So get ready. This is going to be a disaster. Also, I think my brain's not working properly. So this is going to be fun. And
it's suntanned.
It's something. You put together the rundown. Usually I do the rundown every week, but this week Meredith did it because I was busy all day getting toasted. So there's a lot of baseball, guys.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm just angry about things, and I think that was just like, you know, when we were talking earlier today and you're like, can you put down a rundown? I'm like, yeah. So I'm like, let me type out and write down all of the things that are making me mad this week. And that's what we're going to talk about.
I mean, that's pretty much what I do. I go, who made me mad this week? Boom, 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 boom. There we go. That's how the rundown is made. That's all, you know, this radio stuff, man.
I mean, that's really like what it comes down to is... Yeah. You know, what are like, what's happening and what do you have a strong opinion on, you know? And there's a lot of strong opinions going around this week. So we've got Myles Garrett back in the news. Ooh. Mason Rudolph not far behind. John Beilein. That's going to be a doozy to get into. And then we've got, baseball, because a lot of baseball things made me mad.
You like all my sound effects for these things?
Yeah, we don't even need a soundboard. We just got Brittany doing sound effects. Hey, Brittany, baseball. Hey, Brittany, football guy. I thought you were going to be truck testicles.
What's up? Coded language.
Actually, that sounds more like a surfer guy. I got them mixed up. See, I've spent way too much time in the sun. I can't be this person anymore.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, just too much beach time. But yeah, we'll get into the Myles Garrett stuff. So he's back in the news. He went on Outside the Lines with Mina Kimes on Saturday morning and pretty much doubled down on the comments that he made about Mason Rudolph using a racial slur, and reiterating that he said "you stupid N-word" was the language that Myles Garrett used. And then one of the things that he did say that I'm really glad that he did, I mean, it was definitely a PR thing, but he did say that one of the reasons why he didn't come out immediately with the accusations is that he didn't want it to excuse his actions, because he even admits that what he did was inexcusable. And it was like that. There's no place in the world for, you know, that kind of violence. And he understands that. And I think I saw somewhere that he had said something to John Dorsey right away.
Yes.
But I think it was also one of those where he didn't really want it to get out because, you know, again, I think he's, let me rephrase that. I know he's insanely embarrassed by what happened. And I know that, you know, if he could take it back, he would. But, you know, he doesn't want these racist accusations to excuse anything. So that's, mm-hmm. you know, the what boils down to that interview that he had on Outside the Lines. And then Mike Tomlin spoke. And then, well, Mason Rudolph tweets.
Oh, my gosh. You know,
false accusations. Mason Rudolph's lawyer threatens to sue Myles Garrett for defamation of character. I kind of hope that he does, because we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, in that the audio, we all know that there's audio, like there's no doubt
for sure,
but you know, the only way it's ever going to be released is, you know, in a situation like a lawsuit, because then you have a court order and you have to turn it over. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want Mason Rudolph to sue.
I think that would be the best case scenario. If there is a best case scenario in the situation, that would be it. Just because I said the other day, like the NFL, if they wanted to, they could put this to bed one way or the other. We could know the truth. We all know that there's audio out there. Like, they really think they're pulling a fast one on us saying, yeah. Oh, no, you know, he's the only quarterback that didn't have, you know, a mic that game, and convenient, all these really convenient things happened so that we don't have audio, but it's there. We know it's there. It was a Thursday night game. You know, everyone was, I think Kareem Hunt might've been mic'd up that day. Like, this is a normal thing to have mics in there. So if the NFL wanted to say, okay, let's put an end to this, someone's lying and someone's telling the truth. And I have a feeling that they probably know. But it's such an ugly situation that there's no winners and losers here. But the one that stands to lose the most, I think, is the NFL in general, right?
Yeah, because the optics of it looks really bad.
Right.
So if you're looking at things from an objective NFL perspective, if there's audio proof that Mason Rudolph didn't say it, then Myles Garrett looks bad. If mm-hmm. there is audio proof that Mason Rudolph did say it, then that looks like either way. So for the right. NFL, they're looking at this situation saying, you know, we're in a bad spot either way, because right. we've got this number one draft pick from 2018 who has this, you know, just has this charismatic personality that everyone is drawn to. And he's got, you know, some of the biggest potential in the NFL. He's one of the most talented guys in the NFL. Like, there's a reason he was taken first overall, and Mason Rudolph is, you know, a third round pick on a good day, or, you know, excuse me, a third string QB on a good day.
Or so, you know, maybe third round pick if you're being generous.
I was thinking, so this past NFL draft that was in Nashville, I thought it was so funny when you had people that were like hanging around Broadway for like the sixth round, and I'm like, my God, those people are either super dedicated NFL fans, or they're just really drunk tourists that don't know what's going on.
So wait a second. Maybe you're both. Not going to hang around till the sixth round when it's in Cleveland in a few years? When is that?
2021. So it's okay. Going to be in Vegas. Yeah. So it'll be in Vegas this year and Cleveland in 2021. I will be there, but probably just because it's required of my job. So if I were
with
going.
You?
Huh?
Will you take me with you?
Yes.
Like, can you sneak me in somewhere?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. By then,
I'll wear a wig and everything. Nobody will even know.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely get you in. That'll be fun for sure. But yeah, that's but yeah, this whole thing is just bad for the NFL. And then one of the things that I thought was very interesting was Mike Tomlin going on ESPN a day or two after Myles Garrett did. And that's huge, just because Mike Tomlin, he's not very open with the media. You know, he'll speak when he has to during the season, but he's not required to speak in the off season, and he doesn't. And right. he never really has. So the fact that he is not only coming out in the off season and speaking publicly, but he's doing it on TV, on ESPN, I think that speaks volumes for his support of Mason Rudolph, because there's no way someone of that stature would put his reputation on the line for right. Mason Rudolph if he if he really thought that, you know, that Rudolph said a racist term. So,
like, I mean, and especially you look at just what's happening here, and you have, you know, a black coach defending this white quarterback over something that a black player says that he heard, something horribly offensive and terrible mm-hmm. and should never be said. So, I mean, I don't even know where to begin with that, because it's like,
I know,
because okay.
you're the Mike Tomlin stan on the podcast here. He's your guy.
I've said before I have a love-hate relationship with him.
That's true. Yeah, because he'll do things that make you like really respect him, and yes. then he does things that really piss you off. Like
my biggest beef with him right now is, dude, why were you even like throwing the ball when there was what, like, yes. 8 seconds left? Why, Mike? Tell me that. Answer me that, sir. Why were
you? Because
it didn't matter. You were down by 2 touchdowns. You weren't going to do anything. So you know what?
Yeah.
Meredith, this is all Mike Tomlin's fault, really, if you look at it.
It is. And that's what we covered, I think, like the day after it happened. I think that was another day that Bree was out, and it was just you and I. And we were kind of, or maybe Bree was here, but we were like retracing the steps. And it all came back to Mike Tomlin calling this play with 8 seconds left, down 2 touchdowns. Like, you really think you're going to, like, you really think Mason Rudolph is going to score 2 touchdowns
in like 15 seconds?
You know? So, yes.
That interview, though, was kind of weird, wasn't it? Like, people were making jokes. They're like, Mike Tomlin, blink twice if you need help. Just the way he was. Like, his whole demeanor was. I mean, I don't know if that's how he normally is, because, again, like you said, I don't see him talk a whole lot. I don't see him do a whole lot of interviews. So, like, watching that, you know, the way he was, like, looking at the camera and stuff, it all just felt very weird. And I was sitting here thinking, I was like, you know, I mean, everyone has a price, right?
Yeah.
So, who are we to say?
Yeah, I mean, unless he kind of knows, like, this whole situation is my fault and I'm trying to, like, make it right by sticking up for my practice squad quarterback.
So. I mean, you know, these are his boys, you know?
Yeah.
Did he ever say anything about, like, Ben Roethlisberger? Did he ever make comments or did he ever defend him in any way? I don't know. Do you remember that?
I don't remember, and I feel like that means probably he either didn't, or they were just coach speak, no comment type thing. Because okay. I feel like if Mike Tomlin had made comments about Ben Roethlisberger, then they're ones that would have stuck in our heads, you know? Because
right.
this is something that's going to stick in our heads for a really long time. Things like when Hugh Jackson comes up for his press conferences after a Browns loss talking about, I'm going to look at the tape, I'm going to drive the bus. You know, these things stick with you. So that leads me to believe that he either didn't say anything, or he was very diplomatic in how he did answer it, and probably just said, like, oh, I'm going to stick with on-field questions, something like that. So
yeah.
I mean, I'll probably wind up looking it up after this. But yeah, I don't recall Tomlin saying anything after the Ben Roethlisberger stuff came to light. So
yeah, I feel like I would have, because, like, I followed that really closely, that whole situation. And even now, mm-hmm. like, you know, I make snarky little comments about Ben pretty often still, because I don't want people to forget, you know?
Yeah.
If I could do one thing to just remind people of something, I sound so evil. If I could just do one thing to remind people of something terrible, I'm going to do it.
No, I mean, it's not bad. I think I want to see, it's more like, it's like vigilante justice. Like that,
exactly.
Like you're Twitter Batman over here.
Yeah, thank you. Oh my God. I'm going to put that in my bio now.
Yes, I will. Twitter Batman. Vigilante justice.
But to be fair, I'm pretty consistent. Like, I do the same thing with Jameis Winston. Although, like, his jokes just write themselves at this point. Like,
oh,
he
yeah.
became 30 interceptions, 30 touchdowns. Like, I don't even yeah. know where to begin with him. He just had LASIK surgery.
I know. I'm jealous. I wish I could get LASIK surgery. Screw these glasses. They make me so mad. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I'm actually, like, interested to see, A, if the Buccaneers sign him, or if he winds up with another team, and whether or not the LASIK was actually a problem. Because, I mean, if you go back and even watch his film in college, he's, like, constantly squinting. And I'm looking at him and I'm like, I feel you on that. Like, I don't have the worst eyesight in the world, but, you know, when I'm not wearing my glasses or contacts, I'm definitely, like, Squinty McGee. So
yeah, you should wear those goggles. You know, like, basketball
yes.
players, like, the prescription goggles
yes.
that they wore in, like, the 70s?
Yes.
Now, that would be cool.
and what they make. I still think that like elementary school kids wear those because like my both of my nephews play sports. One's 6 and 1's 7 or something like that. And the younger one played football and he had those little prescription goggles and he looked so cute.
Aren't they the cutest?
And he also got 4 rushing touchdowns in one of his last games. So I don't know. Maybe Jameis Winston should go for the sport goggles.
There we go.
But getting back to Myles Garrett, and then another layer to this story. This morning, Aditi Kinkabwala came out, and I don't want to say that she necessarily defended Mason Rudolph, but she very definitively said there's no audio. Mm-hmm. And she also made the point of, you know, if the NFL is hiding audio, it looks like they're trying to protect Mason Rudolph. And why would the NFL, you know, protect a practice squad quarterback over a first round pick? And that was kind of something that she rallied on. And initially I was I disagreed with her very harshly on that one, but just because I'm like, they're not protecting Mason Rudolph. They're protecting themselves and their reputation. Yes. And guarding themselves from the PR disaster that will inevitably happen if this audio is released. But then I'm also thinking, and I floated this theory to a few of my coworkers, and no one really commented on it. They just kind of gave me this look. My conspiracy theory surrounding Aditi's comments is because she very clearly said the league wouldn't protect Mason Rudolph over Myles Garrett. And to me, little Miss Tinfoil Hat over here, because I love a good conspiracy theory. That's why I watch all those stupid alien shows on the History Channel and like the ghost shows on Travel Channel. Like, I love those things because I'm all about conspiracy theories. I'm almost reading that as her very plainly saying, I have heard the audio. Maybe she hasn't heard the audio, but there is audio and it's not in Myles Garrett's favor. And that's almost how I was reading that, because like we said earlier in the podcast, if the audio gets released and there is no clear audio of Mason Rudolph using the N-word, then Myles Garrett looks so bad. Yeah. So, and I'll preface this by saying I believe Myles. I do not believe that Myles Garrett is a liar, but there is a very real possibility that in the heat of the moment, he thought he heard something and that set him off, because if it was something that sounded like that word or something that could have been interpreted as that word, it's going to make him lose his mind. And then Mason Rudolph, who knows what he said, claims that he didn't say it, you know, because that, I mean, and that's where the sticky part of the situation can come in, because I could absolutely see that as the situation being Myles Garrett thought that he heard something. And Mason Rudolph didn't actually say what he thought he said. And then that just makes this whole situation even uglier. So I'm almost thinking that the NFL is hiding this audio to protect Myles, if that's the case.
I think they're just protecting it they're hiding it to protect themselves. Because if the best case scenario here is a he said situation, and then it just eventually dies. And anytime you're in a situation like that, man, that's a bad one. Like,
it really
let's
is.
Just let it die on speculation. And this is this situation is so much more than, you know, when she said, oh, well, why would they want to protect, you know, Mason when they could protect Myles? Like, it's not about protecting anyone. They're a business. They're a billion-dollar business. They're protecting themselves. So unless Mason Rudolph, if he goes through and decides that he wants to sue him for defamation, at that point I'll consider that, you know, maybe Myles misheard him, or, you know, maybe it just never happened. And I'd hate to believe that, because I do believe Myles Garrett. And it's not because, you know, we're just Brown super fans and we don't think our players will do anything wrong. You know, Kellen Winslow Jr., he was my favorite player. He was my favorite Browns player. And that's super hard for me to admit now because of all the horrendous things that he did. Yeah. Once I find out somebody did something terrible, I'm like, okay, you're done. Like, I will never cheer for anyone like that.
Dead to me.
Yeah, dead. Totally dead. He's the only jersey I've ever owned from the Browns. Isn't that terrible?
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah,
I know.
I almost bought my dad a Johnny Manziel jersey as a joke once, because it was like $4. It was so I was at a mall in in Baltimore, Maryland, of all places. I don't even want to get into why I was in Baltimore, but I was in Baltimore and I was at a mall and I was trying to buy a gift for one of my cousins, and I saw Johnny Manziel jersey on the clearance rack for $4, and I almost got it for my dad as a joke, but I refrained because my $4 is better spent at like Starbucks or something like that.
Yeah, the thing with Miles is that it's not because we're Browns, it's because we watch this team and we follow these people, you know, whether it be on social media or we pay attention to interviews. Obviously, like, we kind of get a view of these players that other fans of other teams, they might not get this sort of insight or not even care to. But we do. That's our player. You know, he was a high pick. You know, everyone was on board. He has a great future ahead of him. So, you know, we do invest in him a little bit more. And we see, you know, the stuff that he does, the stuff that he's into, his hobbies. You know, he likes writing and poetry, and
he likes anime and dinosaurs.
Yeah, he was wearing at that interview, he was wearing a Stranger Things t-shirt.
Yes.
You know, and this off season, he's doing the Water Boys thing, the charity work. He's going to East Africa to get them water. I mean, like, this is the kind of person that we see. So yes, it has nothing to do with, oh, he's our player, so we have to defend him. No, we're not going to do that, but we see a softer, gentler, you know, nicer side than most people do. So that's why we get in line to back him up, and that's why we're likely to believe his story, because we see his character in a way that other fans don't.
Yeah, and this is also a person who, like, 2 or 3 weeks prior to this Pittsburgh game, was literally punched in the face. Yes. In the middle of downtown Cleveland, like, someone, like, and I cannot believe this happened, and I wish I knew who it was, because I mean, I don't know, I probably wouldn't do anything, but I would just sit there and seethe in the corner. But yeah, this, someone comes up to they see Myles Garrett in his car, come up to him and say, hey, I'm a huge fan. Myles Garrett rolls down the window and then the guy punches him in the face.
Yes.
And Myles Garrett doesn't react, but then he makes a joke about it on Twitter later.
Right. Like, he could have killed this person if he wanted to.
Yes.
What kind of balls do you have to punch Myles Garrett in the face? Like, yeah. Whoa. Nope.
Like, oh my God. It just... Oh God. That's your I've got balls voice.
I bet he was driving a pickup truck too. I would bet my life on it. No doubt. Yes. No
Football
doubt.
Football guy wanted to prove how tough he was by punching the biggest guy in downtown Cleveland, which happened to be Myles Garrett at the time. So yeah, like, yeah, and I agree with 100% with everything that you're saying, and why we fall in line behind Myles is, you know, the people who know him personally, like, I've interacted with him before, and he's always been the kindest person. And, you know, nobody ever has anything bad to say about him. So this is just something that's completely out of character, which is why I believe him. But then, you know, the fact that Aditi was so adamant in what she was saying, and the fact that Mike Tomlin came out of, you know, whatever cave he lives in during the off season and went on TV, like, those are the things that sort of put a little bit of doubt in my mind that Mason Rudolph actually said a racial slur. But like I said, I will forever believe Miles, even if there's audio released that proves Mason is innocent. I'm still going to believe Myles Garrett because I think he heard something. Even if it wasn't something that was said, I think Miles heard something. So, you know.
Yes, I'm with you.
Yeah. Call us a super fan. Call us stands on that one. I don't care. Like, we stand behind Miles on this podcast.
So. I'm with you, Miles. Come on the show.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing. So, speaking of people that at least Brittany likes to stand behind, let's talk about the Cavaliers.
Oh, no.
Let's talk about your let's talk about your favorite team in Cleveland. God, I don't even know where to start with this team.
Let's talk about how John Beilein is about to forfeit $20 million to get out of this job.
I mean, that's a lot. Like,
$20 million. Well, like, imagine what you could do with $20 million. And it's not worth it. Remember I said we were talking about Mike Tomlin. I said everyone has a price. Mm-hmm. Apparently, John Beilein's more than $20 million. I mean, can you? I would coach the Cavs for, like, $1,000.
Yeah, and we have what, like, 8 weeks maybe left in the regular season of the NBA, and if he was going to get fired at the end of the season, you know, wait it out, get fired, get paid. Like, how many coaches are the Cavaliers paying that don't currently coach in the NBA or coach for the Cavaliers. Like, they are paying out millions of dollars to coaches that no longer work in the organization. Like, John Beilein, if he had just stuck out the next 8 weeks, he'd be on that list.
And I'm so disappointed that this didn't work, because, like, I was so excited for this whole thing. You know, like, I knew it was going to be rough. I knew that this was going to be a painful year. But, like, the fact that I think I'm most bummed about, we had a plan. And now we don't. They have to, like, start from scratch. And I guess on one hand, it's like, okay, well, if you have a plan and it's falling apart, do you really want to stick with it? And I get it. The players never really seem to be fully on board with it from the beginning. I've heard from people that, you know, reporters and stuff that, you know, spent time in the locker room, that even the young, it wasn't just the vets who weren't on board with, you know, all the time that the Beilein was spent on, like, fundamentals and doing all the stuff that you do in college that works in college that doesn't necessarily transition well to the NBA. And he was super laser focused on these things, and he kind of lost the players early on. So I understand, but, you know, I read today, this Colin Sexton, 21 years old, he just turned 21. He's about to be on his fourth NBA coach.
That's crazy. Like, I mean, that's almost like, you know, Baker Mayfield with his coaches in the NFL, because, yeah. I mean, and this is kind of what this reminds me of, is that this reminds me of the Sashi Brown, the Hugh Jackson, where mm-hmm. Sashi Brown says, okay, this is my plan. And Hugh Jackson says, I don't want to do that anymore. And I think that's really what happened with a lot of these, you know, with a lot of the things with the Cavs. So you have Kevin Love, who supposedly was told when he signed his 4-year contract, by the way, we're going to be rebuilding, you need to be on board with that. Kevin Love says, yeah, I'm on board with that. And then, you know, a third of the way through the season, he sees what an actual rebuild looks like. And yeah. He's like, oh, no, I don't want this. This is not what I wanted. And I think that's kind of what's happening with John Beilein as well, is I think John Beilein was told certain things and laid out a plan, you know, at the beginning of the season. And he said, okay, let's get at it. And now that the plan is coming to fruition, John Beilein says, I don't want to do this. And yeah. I really think that's what it comes down to, is that, you know, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, like the older guys on the squad, Larry Nance Jr., like they don't want to be treated like children or treated like college players. And then you've got mm-hmm. the kids that are straight out of college, like Colin Sexton and Darius Garland and Kevin Porter Jr., who are coming into this saying like, hey, this is supposed to be the NBA. This doesn't mm-hmm. feel like the NBA to us. And so I think that the young guns were very impressionable. And so when you have the veterans on the team that are just not on board and not in line, like I feel like the young guns are going to fall in line with the veterans before they fall in line with the coach.
Yeah. I mean, like at this point, and they released something. Actually, I don't even know who released it. I just read it and it said, oh, well, this was all kind of like part of the plan. They were going to, you know, let Bickerstaff take over anyway. And this was just, you know, he was sort of showing him the ropes and stuff. So I don't think this was part of the plan, guys. It's never part of a plan where your head coach just says, you know what, keep your 20 mil. I'm just going home. Oh, like, that's God. Not a plan.
Can he like take that 20 million and like give it to the Dolans and be like, this can be for Francisco Lindor? Like, because you claim that you don't have any money, you billionaire sports right. team owners. Oh, my God. So I don't know if there's much more that, you know, that we can really. The Cavs are a very frustrating situation, especially since they're looking like the Browns. And I've heard this on, you know, multiple radio shows. I've seen this topic on Twitter, because now this is the, you know, it's the new can Alabama beat an NFL team hack take, is, you know, are the Cavs more dysfunctional than the Cleveland Browns? And I think they're both dysfunctional, but in very different ways.
For sure. I'd say at this point, yes, the Cavs are more dysfunctional, because like I said, at least at the beginning of the year, they had a plan going into it. You know, it was a rebuild. Got it. Like, that's fine. You know, it was a necessary evil. It's what had to happen. But it sucks that now, you know, they hired this coach and We're going to go back to basics and fundamentals. That didn't work. It didn't translate well. It didn't mesh well with the rookies or the vets. So now, you know, you have a coach quitting with, you know, a month and a half left, maybe 2 months. And, you know, I always say that Dan Gilbert is my favorite owner. I always say that. Of the three, Dan Gilbert, I stan him. And Meredith.
are you having trouble? Are you gonna like freezing cold takes yourself on this one?
I'm not gonna do it because I still think they're all like terrible for different reasons, all three of them. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Kobe Altman has a very, very, very hard job. Okay. Imagine, yeah. Like, I think working for Dan Gilbert is probably a lot like working for Michael Scott, where you get most of your work done when he has nothing to do with any of it. Like, he'll come up with these ideas.
It's been a while since we've had a good Office reference.
I mean, that's a good one, because if you think about it, man, it's got to be real close. I feel so bad. And, you know, I just can't imagine there's a harder job in most of, because think about Kobe, like his professional, he's trying to build, he's, you know, young, maybe in his late 30s, I think, GM of the Cavs, stepped in, he had, you know, ginormous shoes to fill, and you have to work for Dan Gilbert, who the pros of Dan Gilbert are that he's passionate. That's actually kind of a con too, so that can go in both categories. He's willing to spend money. He wants to win. He really does. Like, at his core, that's his. He wants this team to be as good as he can. The problem is he doesn't. He can't separate from. You know, I don't know him, obviously. I've never talked to him. But, like, just looking at him as a person, I don't think he can separate good ideas from bad ideas. Okay. So he just gets super passionate about any idea that he has, and then he just puts it out there. And poor Kobe Altman has to be, like, the middleman between this, you know, crazy passionate, you know, maybe a little bit insane person. And then, you know, he has to also build a team from scratch after probably the greatest basketball player ever leaves for the second time. Yeah. And, you know, you have to have enough players in there that fans will like that they'll even show up. So he has to direct all these things. And, you know, I think out of all the GMs, he definitely has the hardest job of all the Cleveland GMs. And, you know, Dan Gilbert, man, you're making me look bad.
I think the most packed that that Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse has been this season was right before the All-Star break when the Pelicans came to town, because everyone wanted to see Zion Williamson play.
So, oh, you mean Colin Sexton dunked on Zion? We're talking about that game?
Yeah.
AKA the highlight of my life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Colin Sexton did pretty well in the Rising Stars game, too. I think he had, 23 points, like 9 rebounds and 5 assists or something like that. Although,
yeah, I mean, look, his 5 assists when, like, there's actual good players around him. I mean, Meredith, who would have thought?
I know. Although, let's be real. The Rising Stars is the only thing that I watched from NBA All-Star Weekend. And Colin Sexton kind of looked like, I mean, he was the kid that was picked last on the playground because he was an alternate. But he also looked like the kid that was picked last on the playground. Like, he had some really, really good hustle. But you just see him running up and down the court trying to get his teammates' attention to get them to pass the ball. And they're just ignoring him. And I felt so bad. I know, because I'm looking at him and I was like, he was the kid who was picked last. And he looks like the kid on the playground that nobody wants to play with. But you have to have him on the team to like fill things out.
Honestly, he's like the most disrespected player in the league, I think. Yeah, my little baby.
But to be fair, like, anytime he got his hands on the ball in that game, he didn't pass either. So I don't know, maybe it was retaliation because his teammates weren't passing to him. But then again, he doesn't really pass that much in general. I think he's allergic to passing.
That's fine. So. That's because he's a shooting guard, everyone. He's a shooting guard. I'm going to repeat that until I can't breathe anymore.
Is that going to be the next t-shirt?
Yes. It's just going to say, he's a shooting guard.
No one's going to know what that means, except for our loyal listeners of this podcast.
Yes.
All right. So I think we can move on to the other thing.
Yeah, I don't want to spend any more time on that. It's depressing and it bums me out. And this just means that it's going to take even longer. And I'm not ready for that. I'm not ready to rally the troops for this, Meredith.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and it's a tough rally too, because you've got the same job that, you know, Kobe Altman has, in a way, where you're trying to be positive when you know that you're going to be losing. And it,
yes,
it's very
hard.
Yes, I am
basically Kobe Altman.
Yes.
That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. Comparing my life to Kobe Altman's in any way is the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
All right. So the third thing that really pissed me off this weekend was Rob Manfred. He did an interview. Like, everyone went on ESPN this weekend. Like, I don't know why I wasn't. Oh, actually, I know why I wasn't on ESPN this weekend. But Rob Manfred does this interview on ESPN, which I will be honest, I shut it off after about 15 minutes because it was the most disrespectful bullshit I have ever heard ever in my life. And he made Roger Goodell look good. Like, how bad of a commissioner do you have to be to make Roger Goodell look good? So he's speaking out about the Astros cheating scandal, and he defended his position about not suspending the players, essentially giving them a hall pass. And he put all of the blame on the GMs, saying that the GMs didn't pass along the information about the sign stealing technology, which is garbage, you know, which is why AJ Hinch gets cut and, you know, and all that other whatever. And Jose Altuve is still playing and Alex Bregman is still playing, and their apologies were bullshit too. But, you know, Rob Manfred is trying to defend it, and it's just sounds like garbage. He referred to the trophy itself, literally the commissioner's trophy, as a quote unquote piece of metal. And I'm like, how can you just degrade something that was named for you? Like, this is the highest honor and the highest prestige and the highest award in mm-hmm. this sport, and you're referring to it as a piece of metal? So are you telling me that every other World Series ever won is like nothing? Like, it doesn't mean anything because it was just a piece of metal? Like, it just, everything he said was absolute garbage. And he's, because I mean, obviously the decisions that he made were stupid. The players absolutely need to be punished on this one. And the fact that Jim Crane is coming out and saying that, you know, oh, the game wasn't affected by what we did. And it's like, well, yeah, it was affected. You know, there are, you know, there, Aaron Judge probably should have gotten an MVP at some point. And, you know, I think, what was it, like 2017? And he didn't get it because of Jose Altuve and his cheating. And, you know, there are pitchers that are not in the league right now that would probably still be in the league if the Astros weren't, you know, hitting dingers off of them left and right because they were stealing their signs. Like, it was just, like, the whole thing was just absolutely angering. And it just, here's the thing, Brittany, you might actually get your XLB this year, because there have been multiple players that have come out and pretty much said that the Astros better watch out. Nick Markakis said that they all deserve to be beaten, which, whew, some harsh words. Yikes. From, you know, from Nick Markakis, to the point where there's a betting line in Vegas. The over-under, well, actually, no, I put it in the rundown, so that's not going to work. But I was going to ask you to take a guess on the over-under at Vegas, what the amount of beaned batters is going to be. They have the betting line set at like 83.5.
Jesus.
So that's essentially every other, that's, I mean, there's 162 games in baseball. So that's essentially saying that there's going to be at least one batter beaned every other game.
Listen, this is all great news for me. This is exactly what I wanted. So, and you know what? Can I just make a point? And I don't even know if it's a good one, because I don't, none of this really means that much to me. But, you know, everyone's talking about how he's such a bad commissioner. I don't think anyone's talked about baseball this much in years, Meredith.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. The past 2 months, has it been 2 months? It feels like it's been the past 10 years, but yeah, for several weeks, this has been a very hot topic all over the country.
And the fact that he's doing, it seems like he's doing everything just to further piss people off. And granted, he's actually kind of putting lives in danger at this point, because if you don't lay down the law, you're leaving it up to players to, like,
self-police, you know, is what they're
doing. That's it. That's what you're doing. So, and this is not going to end well, but it will get people watching. It's already got people talking. I might even tune in to, you know, see these players. I want to see, like, baseball should be like wrestling, and I'm ready to see it. This is everything I've ever wanted. And, you know, this commissioner that I didn't even know existed until last week. And that means something, too, because someone like me, I never pay attention to this stuff. All of a sudden, I know this guy. Up to that point, I thought that Bud Selig was still the commissioner. So here comes this new guy. Well, new to me.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he's like, I'm not going to do anything. He's disrespectful. And, you know, I make jokes about baseball fans being weird and stuff. But, you know, you guys are very traditional. When it comes to the sport, you're very traditional. You like, you know, it's all sort of like romantic to you guys. And like, that's, I'm not even making fun of that. That's just like, you know, that's what baseball is. It's classic. It's, you know,
makes
America's
you fall
pastime.
In love.
Yeah. Like, you know, that's wonderful. I used to feel that way about baseball too. So I understand. But
maybe someday we'll get you back.
They almost got me back when I went to the All-Star game. That was
so good. And I think also what helped with the All-Star game is it was just absolutely perfect weather that weekend.
Oh my gosh, it was beautiful.
Like, Cleveland is sunny like 10 days a year, and three of them happened to be during the All-Star
break. It was like breathtaking. That whole experience. I went for like the celebrity softball game, and I wasn't there for the home run, which ever since I was little, going to the home run derby has always been like one of the top 10 on my bucket list. They always want to go to home run derby, and that's the one thing that I still, no matter what, I watch that every, I don't even watch NBA festivities like I do, you know, with the home run derby. That's like my thing forever.
People love dingers. They want to see people hit dingers. They love it.
That's it. And, you know, I almost came back, but then, you know, the novelty wore off. But now I might tune in some games outside of like Indians games. So.
Yeah. And I think if Major League Baseball is not smart, but I think at this point, if maybe you might need to leave it up to the individual teams, but you're right. I think that there's going to be a lot more eyes on baseball now because of this. And if the players are smart and the owners are smart, and maybe if Rob Manfred has an underlying plan, this is the time where you try to make your sport exciting, where you try to, you know, this is the part where you can start marketing your players and start
maybe
doing.
Maybe this is all part of the plan, Meredith. Maybe this is where it starts.
Yeah, like if you've got more eyes on your sport, this is how you grow it. You know, I have a lot of friends. I have got a good lot of friends who, you know, didn't grow up hockey fans, and you know, I kind of push it on them because I'm pushy like that, and hockey is my favorite sport, and you bring them to games and you kind of show them how much fun hockey is, and then all of a sudden you got these lifelong fans. And I mean, and that's how you grow the game. Like, say what you want about bandwagon fans, but I am all for bandwagon fans when it means it's someone who maybe wasn't interested in the sport before, but they're interested in it now, you know, because this is, I mean, if baseball wants to, you know, if they don't want to be last in line anymore, this is the time to really make a name for themselves in a good way and not a bad way. But, you know, the whole thing with the Astros cheating is it's such a bad look in, you know, just all around. Like, players are pissed.
Rightfully so. Oh, LeBron James came out tonight. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
He came out on Twitter. And hold on, let me find it, because it was a good one. But, you know, before we get to that, like, you know, you said Mike Trout said something, who, by the way, Major League Baseball has done a huge disservice to everyone by not marketing Mike Trout the way they should for years. If I saw him walking down the street, I wouldn't know who he was. And that's such a shame, because, you know, he's like a once a generation player. Like, the fact that, you know, you can't pick him out of a crowd. The casual, you know, I would, if I am a casual fan, even, I don't know. But, you know,
maybe we'll bring you back with this, especially when the Astros are in town. Because, I mean, the betting line is 83.5. I'm wondering if 40 or more of those are going to be just for Jose Altuve, because he's kind of at the forefront of a lot of this anger, especially since he won the MVP over Aaron Judge. You know, and I think there was also, I forget who it was. It may have been like, I don't even remember, because there's just so many people coming out on the Astros side trying to defend them, you know, saying that Jose Altuve claimed that he didn't want the banging trash cans. But if you go back and look, you can see that he actually did get, I don't know. And then you've got the baseball nerds, whom I love to death, but they're showing all the stats of all the times the trash can was banged. So, I mean, it's just,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so LeBron, this is what he said. He said, listen, I know I don't play baseball, but I am in sports, and I know if someone cheated me out of winning the title and I found out about it, I would be effing irate. I mean, like, uncontrollable about what I would slash could do. Listen here, baseball. That's strong. Listen here, baseball commissioner.
He doesn't even know who it is.
I know. Baseball
commissioner.
See, he's just like me. He doesn't know who this guy is. Listen here, baseball commissioner. Listen to your players speaking today about how disgusted, mad, hurt, broken, etc. they are about this. Literally, the ball, and he used a baseball emoji, is in your court, or should I say field, and you need to fix this for the sake of sports. And then his hashtag is my favorite. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Hashtag, just my thoughts coming from a sports junkie, regardless my own sport I play.
That's the whole hashtag.
That's it. That's all one hashtag.
Oh my God. LeBron is such a dad sometimes, and I love it. Yes. Like, he's like, he is such a dad. It's great.
It's amazing. But yeah, like, even you have LeBron James talking about it. Like, wow, baseball.
Yeah.
You are unintentionally doing a great job right now.
Well, and I think this is where we'll leave the baseball discussion, because I had some Francisco Lindor stuff on the rundown, but it's the same stuff. You know, he came out and said he wants to stay in Cleveland. He wants to play in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. He wants to win in Cleveland. Same old. And one of the quotes that he did say that I found very telling was that he said, you know, the team is not broke. The league is not broke. There's money. If it makes sense for both sides, it's going to happen. Like, I think that's very telling about how aware Francisco Lindor is about everything. So
yeah,
we might get more into that next week, especially since spring training actually officially starts on Saturday. The Indians will be playing the Reds. So that'll, yeah. We'll have some actual, even though it may not necessarily be great baseball, it'll be actual baseball. But we can leave this discussion here in saying that all eyes are on this league right now, and I think what they do is going to determine the future of the league, because I think one of the most harsh headlines that I have seen was the headline that one of the national writers wrote was, baseball is burning, and they're not wrong. So if they take this opportunity to maybe try to correct mistakes, and then if they take this opportunity while everyone is watching them to bring in new fans and to keep the new fans, then, you know, their future is in their hands at this point. And I think, you know, what happens over the next few weeks and months is really going to determine whether or not the sport is headed in a good or a bad direction.
For sure. All right. Are you ready for the questions?
I am ready. So we've got Ask Me Anything. Essentially, we did a quick AMA on Twitter today, and it's brought to you by betonline.ag. Betonline.ag is your online sportsbook expert. You can use promo code, not blomo code, but promo code BlueWire, all one word, for a 50% off welcome bonus.
All right. Thank you guys for sending these. We had so many, and like, they're all such good ones. I can only pick so many because, you know, we can't just talk to you all night, guys.
I know. I was really, really happy with the quality of questions that came in.
Yeah, like, we got like some good ones. Now, first of all,
shout out to everybody on Twitter that sent in a good quality question.
Yes. One thing, we got a lot of questions about the draft, both NBA and NFL. I'm just going to be straight up right now. I haven't paid that much attention to it. So, like, those questions, they're lost on me. Give me a couple weeks. You know, once I'm back in Ohio and I'm depressed and there's something, you know, a void I need to fill, I'll start looking at draft stuff. So.
Well, we'll try to make sure you're not depressed. We'll give you a big, warm, happy welcome back to Cleveland.
All right. Let's do some easy ones first. Okay. Meredith, what's your all-time favorite sports movie?
Oh my God. I saw that question and I've been thinking about it and I am still thinking about it. But there are two that immediately come to mind. They're both movies from my childhood, and I think they kind of shaped my love of sports in my two favorite sports. So I would say the top two, cause I can't pick between them, would either be The Sandlot, which, mm-hmm. you know, is an all-time classic sports movie. Yes. And then the other one, which will forever be one of my favorite sports movies, is The Mighty Ducks. So, you know, my two favorite sports and my two favorite sports movies, because I think those definitely had a huge influence on my sports fandom as a child.
Solid choice. You know what mine is? I thought about
I've been thinking about it.
Actually, it really didn't take me long to figure it out, because this is, when I was growing up, this was like my fate. You know what?
See, that's hard.
There are so
many really high quality sports movies in existence. And I'll use this opportunity to give another plug. I do this all the time, but I have to plug our guy Kyle Bandujo. He does a podcast called Big Screen Sports on our Blue Wire Network, where he breaks down the validity of the sports action in these sports movies. So if that's your thing, highly recommend it. So, you know, like, and he's able to do multiple podcasts a week sometimes because there's that many sports movies out there.
All right. So my two favorites.
Yes, what are your favorites?
number one, The Sixth Man. Have you ever seen it?
No, I haven't seen that one.
I feel like everyone sleeps on this movie. And guys, like, this is such a great little film. It's from the 90s.
As all great sports movies are.
Seriously. I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but it's the first movie that ever, like, made me emotional as a child. It's a basketball movie, of course, Sixth Man, about the Washington Huskies. It was a great film. I've probably seen it, like, 100 times. So I've definitely seen that one more than the other one. But my number two choice is Little Giants.
Yes. Oh, my God. I love that movie.
Little Giants. Yes. Spike was the love of my life.
Yes. Oh, that was such a great movie. I mean, we could talk
Spike
all night
was a
about...
definite Dale, by the way.
Yes.
It's amazing that I loved him so much because he was definitely a football guy.
Yeah. I think he shaped the Dales of today.
He did. They watched Little Giants one too many times. Spark, yeah. Don't play with girls. Come here, ice chest.
Oh my God, that was such a great movie.
It was. Okay. Now, I don't know if I should, like, I'll ask you, but this is a Cleveland, like, super Cleveland question.
Okay.
If you could go back in time and change one piece of Cleveland sports history, what would it be and why?
Yeah, I mean, that's tough, just because I didn't grow up in Cleveland. But I would say there are two that stick out to me. I think one, obviously, is Art Modell selling the team. And the reason I bring that one up is because I have seen my father cry twice in my life. Once was when my grandmother died, and then the other was when Art Modell sold the team. So my dad is an insanely stoic person. So to see him cry like that, especially with how young I was at the time, and, you know, you're little, and, you know, he's a girl dad, so he's my superhero, and then all of a sudden just to see him just as emotional as he is, like, I don't like seeing my dad like that. So, you know, I would change that. And I think also for the sake of Cleveland as well, because I, you know, say what you want about Cleveland, Ohio, like, the fans did not deserve that at all.
Yeah.
So I think that's one. And I think the other was the rain delay from the 2016 World Series, because it would have made me as a baseball fan and as someone with Cleveland roots very happy to see the Indians win that World Series. Like, I was living in Nashville at the time, and I was dating a guy who was a Cubs fan. So we were out at the bars every other night watching those games. And so, it didn't last much longer than that. And baseball isn't I guarantee you baseball isn't the reason why, but he was so annoying when we were watching these baseball games, because he wasn't even from Chicago. It was just one of those, like, oh, well, I just want to see them win. Like, why do you want to see them win? Like, what connection do you have to the fucking Cubs? Excuse my language. What connection do you have to the Cubs that you want to see them win?
F-bombs.
I know. I was so mad. But I promise the reason we stopped seeing each other was not because of those baseball games. But yeah, I would have liked to have seen the Indians take home a title in 2016. I wanted to see the summer of Cleveland. The Cavs and the Monsters, the Indians and Stipe. That would have been amazing. But
yeah. That would have been amazing. That would have been something. So, I'd say, let me think about this. Okay, this is not going to be a great answer because it's a very selfish answer.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I would change, and it would just be the entire outcome of something, okay? The 2007 Indians.
Mm-hmm.
The 2007 Indians were, like, they are at my heart and soul. They were my favorite team of any sport of all time. I loved that team so much. And the fact that they made it so far that year, and then they were playing the Red Sox, and then they just completely collapsed. I think they were up 3-1.
Mm-hmm. And that 3-1 is such a ratio here in Cleveland.
They did it. And the worst part was that I had tickets to the World Series, which going, like, as I've said before, the Indians were like, I was obsessed with them. So, like, you know, my whole life, and all I had tickets waiting for me to go to the World Series, and then they were up 3-1, and me and my sister were like, you know, buying shirts to make and stuff to go to the World Series. We were so excited. And at the time, I was dating a Red Sox fan too. So he's like, you know, yeah, exactly. And he's, you might not want to get ahead of yourself here, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, shut up. We're going, but then, and it never happened.
Yeah, and it's okay. I dated a Cubs fan. We clearly have our flaws.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, I would just change everything about 2007. I wish they could have won that year, because after that, you know, the Red Sox went on, they played the Rockies, and the Rockies were a team that they got hot at the right time, and then they didn't. They got real cold. The Indians would have beat the Rockies, and I wish so bad that I could have that back and just, you know, rewrite history for that season. That's my answer.
Now, that's actually a really good answer. Like, I know you say it's selfish, but that was a fantastic answer.
I mean, I was very passionate about that team. That was my favorite team, man.
Mm-hmm.
Still emotional about it.
All right, what's next?
You want some? Ooh, this is a good one.
Okay.
Well, it's kind of a depressing one.
Okay.
This is from at Mick Redskins, which is a great name.
Oh my God, are they a Redskins fan?
I don't know. They
should be a DC Defenders fan.
Said, I want to know how Valentine's Day was for you beautiful ladies. Did you get dinner made for you? Did you get flowers? Did you get married?
Well, I'm still very single, so no to that last one. No to flowers. I've never gotten flowers ever in my life. Ever?
Ever?
Never. Man. I've never had a boyfriend or someone that I've been dating get me flowers.
Do you tell them at the beginning, oh, I don't like flowers?
No, I don't even say anything about flowers ever at all. I just, you know, it's just never a topic of conversation that comes up.
Guys, wow, even I've gotten flowers.
Yeah, no,
and I'm like a terrible person.
And then, well, I was working on Valentine's Day, so I was working a late shift on Valentine's. So, yeah, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I didn't get dinner made for me. I think I went to the grocery store and picked up a sandwich or something to eat at work. So that was my Valentine's Day, is grocery store sandwich and working. How was yours?
You know what? Me and my friend down here, well, she's like technically family, Jenna.
Yes.
We went and got a 60-piece chicken nugget tray.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Now, was it cheap?
Was it cheap, like a heart?
It wasn't, because the only heart-shaped ones they had were like 24 pieces, and it was us, and, you know, our moms are here, and my brother was here, and the girls, so it's like a whole family thing. But we went and got, this is what we do every year when I'm here. God forbid I ever get a boyfriend and I have to break this tradition, because this is going to be a tough one to break. So we went there, we got our Chick-fil-A chicken nugget tray, and that's pretty much it. I don't really do Valentine's Day. Oh, someone did send me $5 to get coffee on them. Aww. So that was really nice. I know.
That was very sweet.
I know. So yeah.
One of my coworkers, one of the ladies who works on the office side, she's like my second mom, and she like lectures me and all the time when I, make stupid decisions. And, you know, she's kind of, since my parents live so far away, like anytime I've needed someone, she's been there for me. So she got me a pair of earrings. I forgot about that. But yeah, she got me like one of those cute little, like the Valentine's that like everyone in your class got. And so she got like one of those for me, and then a pair of earrings to go with it. So I did get a present on Valentine's from someone as I consider my second mom. And then my actual mom got me a, and I don't have it yet because my parents are currently in Florida, but she got me a Virginia Tech throw blanket, which I'm sure she'll bring to me next time they come visit. So those, yeah, those are my Valentine's, those are my Valentine's present from my mom and my second mom.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. And this is, we could actually probably make a whole, like, this could be its own section on a rundown eventually. Yeah, and I would love to hear.
I'm kind of looking at this last question. I know. I'm kind of looking at your last question on the list, and I'm like, that one looks like a lot of fun to answer.
Okay, let me. We're going to do this one first. Okay. The last one we're definitely going to answer because it's funny. But yeah. I'm going to set this up so that, because I don't want this person to think that this doesn't. Because I said it's a very good question. This is from at 33 Milner. It said, why is there a civil war amongst fans of each team in Cleveland on Twitter? Like, Indians fans will argue with Browns fans or vice versa. I want to answer this question, but we're going to have to do that, like, next week, I think. Because yeah. I could rant about this for probably 20 minutes. And I look forward to doing that because I'm very passionate about this specific thing. So we'll do that next week. But thank you for that question. It's a very good one.
Well, I mean, okay. And also what's good is that, like, you're kind of like an insider perspective on this from being born and raised in the area. Like, I'm a little bit of an outsider perspective, having only lived here for 3 years. So, like, I kind of look at it from the outside looking in sometimes, and I kind of have some ideas. So I'm definitely going to write those down for next week.
Yes, and we need Bree to weigh in on this too, because I think she, you know,
she would definitely have opinions on this. Yeah,
and it's going to be a good. I think everyone will appreciate. Well, not everyone. Some people will appreciate what we have to say about that. Indians fans might not appreciate what I have to say. All right, so last question. This is a good one, and it's from at Charles Bald Pity. I'm sorry, I don't know, bald pity. All right, after a few drinks of the three of us, who's the happy one, who cries, and who wants to fight everybody? Okay, I think we can both agree that Bree would be the happy one.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to take this one first, or do you want me to take it?
I'm gonna say, yeah, I'll go first. Okay. I'm gonna say after a few drinks, Bree would be the happy one because her life's the most put together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, she's like super mom with the super dad, and she's adorable little kids. Like, she's mastered life. She works very hard. She has an awesome job. Like, Bree's a queen. She's good. So, you know, if she is drunk, happy drunk, good times. Yeah. Me and Meredith. I'm going to say, Meredith, you would be the one to fight everyone.
Kind of accurate. So I would say with me, I think it like depends on who I'm around. You know, if I'm around like you and Bree, I'm going to be like the I love everybody because I'm, you know, surrounded by people that I absolutely adore. But if I'm around someone who has made me mad or is pissing me off or... you know, then it turns into like She-Hulk very quickly. So, you know, I think it's, you know, and I think for me, I think it depends on, because I mean, I'm absolutely an extrovert, which makes sense as a drunk. So it depends on like who's around me. So, you know, if someone is being mean to me, I'm going to cry. If someone is pissing me off, I'm going to want to fight them. And then if I'm, you know, around you and Bree and any of our other friends, I'm gonna be like, I love you guys so much.
Well, I think the last time you and I went out, I actually did end up crying, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. Which reminds me, I was going through some things on my phone, and I know that I'm derailing this a little bit, but I found a picture of the two of us from that time that I don't remember taking.
Somebody sent me a picture of this. I'm gonna send you this afterward because it's like the worst photo of me of all time.
Goodness.
He sent it to me, and I was like, "Oh no!
Oh no, dear!
Please don't ever show anyone that."
But yeah, so I guess you're the crier of the group when it comes to drinking.
Yeah, it's same with you. Like, it depends on who I'm around.
Yeah.
So if I'm, you know, with somebody that's upsetting me, then I'll probably start crying. I might start crying anyway. So I'm a happy crier too.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get really happy and that makes me cry. So, you know, I'm just pretty emotional naturally. So, yeah.
Well, that concludes our Ask the Bees Anything segment. It's brought to you by betonline.ag. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE, that's all one word, for your 50% off welcome bonus at betonline.ag.
So thanks for tuning in this week, guys. We'll be back next week. Bree will be back next week to be our point guard again. I'm sorry if this was terrible. I tried my best. And good job. Thank you.
You were great.
Thank you, Meredith. You did a great job doing this rundown. Be sure to like, subscribe, share, leave a review.
Interact with us on Twitter, because we love the Twitter interactions.
Yeah. Thanks. See you next week.